Hi, you're listening to Resonance 104.4 FM. If you're listening on the radio, or you might be on the internet, you could be in another country. That's the beauty of the World Wide Web. I'm Stuart Lee, in on what used to be Billy Jenkins' show, but it's not anymore. But it's still called One-Way Single Parent Family Favourites, or something, some kind of phrase that has all those constituent parts. I can never quite remember what order they come in. I've got two guests today for the next 2 hours. One of them's already here, but I'm not going to introduce him yet, because one of the things about radio is making it exciting by delaying information. So let's start with a track off the debut album by The Hospitals, which is out now. This is a version of Suicide's song, Rock and Roll is Killing My Life. We'll be right back.
nest dance under my drawbridge, and blackbirds make nest in my tree. I enjoy being a boy in love with you.
Yeah, that was that's the Banana Splits, actually, from a sort of bootleg of all the incidental music from the Banana... that was the Banana Splits, from a sort of bootleg of incidental music from the Banana Splits programme. And it's all uncredited, but we can assume that's probably someone like the Chocolate Watch Band or something being roped in the studio to provide musical accompaniment for men dressed as kind of hairy animals. Now, I always say to the guests, bring in three tunes that you want, and by a strange coincidence, our first guest, I'm not going to tell you who he is yet, remember, because that's what makes radio exciting, the delay. He brought in the same band as I was going to actually play and open the show with, and I probably should have still done that, because the Hospitals track, probably more like a kind of 1:05 rather than midday sort of tune. But anyway, the American country rock band Uncle Tupelo have just had all their first three albums reissued with extra tracks. Here's a track from one of them, and it's called Graveyard Shift.
Town, same town blues, same old walls closing in. Well, what a life a mess can be. Well, I'm sitting here thinking of you once again. You talk to me. What time will wait better up again? Get on, start, needs to be done. It's winding down, there's much you miss. Working on that graveyard shift. But I'm not saying things won't go wrong. It still comes along. What I see is true, I could learn to believe. Can't look away. Powers that be might take it all away. Together we burn. Together we burn. Sunset land of paradise, sunset land of pain. Well, what side are you looking from? Some people have it all, and some want the gain. Well, man, it's high bump your time for a break, it's $20 bill. There's plenty of reasons in this world, moving along or standing still. But I'm not saying things won't go wrong, instead comes along. What I see is true, I could learn to believe. Can't look away.
been looking for a reason. Since the simple ones beat the most truth. Well, what a life a mess can be. Well, I'm sitting here thinking of you. Won't you give these thoughts to me? Well, time on way better open the gate. Get out, start, needs to be done. It's winding down, there's much you miss. Working on that graveyard shift.
That's Uncle Tupelo from 13 years ago from their first album, No Depression, which has just been reissued with extra tracks. No Depression, of course, that gave its name to the whole alternative country movement in the States. They called it No. They talked about No Depression bands, and there's a magazine, No Depression, which covers them and all old-timey stuff that's really good. And my copy of the most recent edition of No Depression was actually stolen on Thursday night, along with my bag and my phone, and a video of 6 Feet Under from the Costa Dorada restaurant, which is on Hanway Street off Tottenham Court Road. I know that we're on radio and it's not the place to cast aspersions, but it felt very much like an inside job to me. So, you know, if you're going to go there, make sure that you... Because basically there was no one in there apart from me, my girlfriend and her friend. And the waitress gave us some sausages and kind of leant in around the side of the table. And I'm not saying that she stole it, I'm just saying... That's the only real moment when it could have gone. But luckily, my diary, which has all important information, was found by an American tourist staying at the Regency House Hotel on Gower Street, and he returned it to me, so I've forgotten his name. Frank Knuppel, that was his name, actually, and we can say that track was for him. And it was chosen by our first guest today, Andy Zaltzman, the comedian. Hello, Andy.
Hello, Stu.
Thanks for coming in.
Oh, it's a pleasure to spend my Sunday lunchtime here.
Is it?
Oh, it is, yeah. I've got the earliest I've been up on a Sunday for quite a while.
But you are associated... Well, all reviews of you say you're a satirist, right? So doesn't that mean you have to be up looking at what... I mean, there's a lot of Sunday newspapers out. You should be reading them.
Well, yes. Satire never sleeps,
no.
I suppose. Well, you can't rush into these things. You have to be extremely well-rested to... be satirical.
Is it tiring?
Oh, it's hugely tiring. It's I'm very much like the Tour de France.
Right.
You know, it's just kind
have
of
you ever
grueling
seen the
daily
Tour de France?
Toil.
Have you ever actually been?
No, I saw it go through Tunbridge Wells about 10 years ago.
It must have been really badly off route.
Well, yeah, they did take a bit of a dogleg that year, but it was very exciting.
I was in France last week, and I was trying to get to this old castle, and I got lost in the countryside because. And I couldn't get through this one village because it was all closed off. And there were all these people sitting around on deck chairs by the side of the road. And the policeman kept redirecting me. And I went, qu'est-ce qu'il y a? You know, what is happening or something? And he went, Tour de France, in like an annoyed way. And all the people were sitting, waiting. And I thought that was probably the most French thing that could happen to you, was to be stopped in France by the Tour de France.
Yeah, that's pretty good. In Tunbridge Wells, it was very exciting because the peloton kind of came streaming through the town and... It was all over in about 20 seconds.
Why was it in Tunbridge Wells?
Oh, I think it was some kind of trendy bridge-building idea.
Towards the disgusted people.
Yes. Yeah.
Actually, that's interesting you're from Tunbridge Wells, because we'll talk about the word satire in a minute and why it sickens me, the actual word, but I'd really like your stuff, so I wonder why is that. But do you feel like Tunbridge Wells is traditionally associated with disgust and outrage, isn't it?
No, very much, yeah.
Is that something that you've channeled into your work, do you think? Are you disgusted of Tunbridge Wells, the comedian?
I think the traditional Tunbridge Wellsian disgust is possibly a slightly of a slightly different political hue than I am, and it's yeah, I mean, it's basically a sort of living embodiment of the Daily Mail, really. But
you're the second guest we've had on in 6 weeks from Tunbridge Wells.
Really?
Yeah.
But who's the other one?
Dan Rhodes, the novelist. You know him?
No, I don't know him. No. I
thought you might have seen him around.
I probably have seen him around.
His dad,
ran
a pub or something in Tunbridge Wells.
Really? Which one?
I can't remember.
All right, that's a good story.
See, that's not interesting. But I've just undone all the great work I did of delaying your arrival.
I know. I feel it's quite hard for me to live up to that now. I feel like I've got to do some kind of ordeal dance now.
Okay, so you get reviewed. You're talked about as you get reviewed with the word satire. But when I used to write for Weekending and Spitting Image, and I came to hate that whole idea of satire because it seemed to me. It was something that's quite illustrated quite well by Simon Munnery. He used to talk about there being a satire machine, and he did this kind of animation of a big kind of Heath Robinson machine, and you put, you know, Bruce Springsteen in one end, and then some mush comes out of the other end. It really felt like there was about five different kinds of formats on Spitting Image and Weekending, and you just crank the things in, and then they come out, and Fergie had a fat bum, or what, John so-and-so was small, and John Major eats peas or whatever. But so that's what I always think of satire, and I just go, hate it. But, like, you are really good, aren't you?
Well, thanks, Stu, yeah.
You're the acceptable ginger face of satire.
So you're already settling into this radio tone of voice. Well, I think, yeah, satire in that sense is very limited, but and I don't really think of what I do as satire, just, I guess, sort of comedy of a kind of political... with political content, and... yeah, just taking individual pot shots at people who happen to be in the news is, you know, there's a place for it somewhere, but yeah, it's not really what interests me. But sort of having seen sort of people like Rod Newman dealing with kind of really broad political issues, that was sort of quite inspirational.
He's really good again, isn't he?
Yeah, he's amazing. Well, I don't know. He must have been a contemporary of yours, I guess.
Yeah, he was. Well, he just went. He played Wembley Stadium and went crazy and disappeared, and then came back and is doing really great stuff.
Yeah, it's quite phenomenal, really. I've done a few gigs with him recently, and I mean, what he's doing now is it's really extraordinary, that the scope of the ambition that he's doing. But it's quite interesting seeing how him and his former colleague David Baddiel have sort of gone in totally polar directions.
Yeah, they have, haven't they?
But what Newman's doing now is really amazing.
Not unlike Jeff Tweedy and Jay Farrar, son of Uncle Tupelo, who've gone in entirely different directions, but and actually in the same commercial sort of way. What about, do you all get together, you and Rob Newman and the other bloke who does satire, and decide who's going to satirise which thing?
No, not really, no. I've started a monthly political stand-up gig.
Oh, right, what's that called?
It's called Political Animal, which is...
That's a good name.
Is it? I was a bit wary of the name, but, it's every once a month in London. But
what night, where? Go on, you're on the radio, you can tell people, they might... don't be coy.
Second Thursday of the month at the Amused Moose.
Right, where's that?
It's in... well, it's moving, so I don't know where it's... new venue's going to be.
This is a classic Resonance interview. I'm doing
all killer, no filler.
I don't know where it is, the thing I'm doing, but
it was at, you know, Barcode in Oxford Street.
It's not going to the Costa Dorada restaurant. if it is, hang on to your bags there. You know, that's sort of classic 50s thing in it as well, of like the London Satire Club. Only we can only imagine what they must have been like, kind of when Peter Cook had the establishment and all that kind of thing.
I'm not sure this is quite in that style.
It probably is. It's probably loads better. That's the thing.
Yeah. Oh, of course. But
well, it's not when you...
They've been really exciting gigs. So we had Al Murray doing the last one. Which is very exciting. And the idea is just to have a kind of forum where people feel that they can go and do kind of political comedy without having to do 10 minutes of knob jokes first.
Yeah.
And
straight in.
Yeah. And it's been really good. We've had a couple of singers on to sort of liven up the evening.
Who was
it? We've had Gavin Osborne a couple of times, who's a sort of political folk singer, and a guy called Bobby Birdie, who's fantastic, also a kind of singer-songwriter, does a kind of really broad range of styles and a lot of sort of strong social content.
So is it a revival of the golden era of satire?
To be honest, I don't know a huge amount about that.
Neither do I.
Golden era of satire, so I don't really know.
Yeah.
It's I just felt there was a real hole for it on the comedy circuit, and there was nothing really that sort of catered for that kind of coming. I think there's an audience for it. And
you know, it'd be great, because if you'd said, yes, it is a revival of that, then we could have linked really easily into the next track I've got lined up.
All right. So you want me to change my answer?
Can you say, I am the new Peter Cook?
I feel like it might come back to haunt me.
No, you can just say
okay.
It.
Okay. I am the new Peter Cook.
Well, that's good, Andy, because the track we're going to listen to now is by Peter Cook and Dudley Moore. It's from the late 60s, and it's a satire that they did of psychedelia, and it's called the LS Bumblebee.
There is a little insect not many people see. He's known to all the insects as the LS Bumblebee. So when you hear him coming, just throw away your tea. That psychedelic humming will mean you'll soon be free.
Oh, druggy, druggy.
Freak out, baby. The bee is coming.
Oh.
I can hear the hum of the lovely LS bum bum bumblebee. To fly out of your mind and into the sky with me. I fly to the land where my hand can see, where my eyes can walk and the mountains grow. I fly to the land where my hand can see, where my eyes can walk and the mountains grow.
I hear with my knees, run with my nose, smell with my feet, my heart is a rose.
This week's Bumba Bumble is for Al Herbert and his marijuana brass and their hit waxing Spanish Bee.
Oh!
I can hear the hum of the lovely LS Bum Bum Bumblebee. Take a little sip from the tiny lips of the LS Bumblebee.
That's Dudley Moore and Peter Cook sticking it to the hippies there. They got them, didn't they, Andy?
They certainly did.
They won't be able to show
them right in the dreadlock.
They had a target and they hit it. They won't be able to show their faces again on Carnaby Street, those blokes, whoever they were. Bit of satire there from the past. And I'm determined
to thoroughly lampoon.
How dare they?
I don't know how you come back from a lampooning like that.
I know. You wouldn't come back. You just go, give up and get a suit and cut your hair.
Yeah.
You give up. See, that's why it ended, the whole psychedelic movement in Britain, because of the LS bum 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 bumblebee. Finish them off. I'm determined, I want to try and use the word satire so much in the next 40 minutes that it becomes meaningless.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, you're doing quite well.
You're going up to Edinburgh to satirise some stuff.
Yeah. I'll be satirising everything.
At 9:05 at the Stand in Edinburgh.
Yes.
What are you looking forward to about this show? What are you going to be doing?
Well, I'm doing a show called Andy's Ultimate Unravels the Great Conspiracy, which is, I guess, loosely about a great conspiracy.
Oh, yeah.
Which I discovered in Liverpool, staying in the Lord Nelson Hotel in room 213, but the kettle in my room had written on it, Lord Nelson Hotel, room 219.
It had been moved.
Yeah, well, it just didn't add up, to be honest.
Yeah.
And then I thought, well, what else aren't they telling me? So I sort of uncovered this sort of web of conspiracy that goes right to the top, and that's what I will be revealing to the public in Edinburgh at the Stand. So, the Stand's a great venue, as you know, you play there a lot. And, I'm sort of looking forward to slightly more relaxed atmosphere, and also being in a venue that isn't a converted schoolroom.
Yeah, it's a designated venue, yeah. Isn't it?
They've actually, I think there's a new room at one of the venues this year, which last year was a Portaloo and is now a venue.
So. Yeah. That's the beauty of Edinburgh, isn't it? But, you know, the thing about playing the Portaloos is it can be quite cheap. But, you know, if you're in a room that's actually been converted, that can... Because you've had a heavy 3 years of debt, haven't you?
Just two.
Is it just two? Yeah. Oh, right.
Yeah, I have. But, you know...
Why go back, then?
Oh, well, it's the thing I enjoy most in stand-up.
In the comedy calendar.
Yeah, having an hour to do whatever I want. And, you know, it can be more expansive than you can... In 20 minutes on a Friday night, in front of 300 drunken scousers, telling you who you look like.
Yeah, and who do you look like?
Well, I don't feel I need to reveal that on the radio, Stuart. I spent most of my life being told who I look like, including in an incident by a woman who was lying in the middle of the road trying to commit suicide recently.
Really?
Who broke out from her fairly inept suicide attempt to tell me that I look like Art Garfunkel.
Wow. So you saved her life.
Yeah. Well, no, it wasn't really me. When she said, why shouldn't I kill myself, I drew a complete blank. But my girlfriend said that the weather might be nice tomorrow, and that seemed to be the turning point, and she perked up a bit. But she did take time out from killing herself to heckle me with who I looked like. So, yeah.
Where was this?
It was just outside where we live in the... In Ballam, I hope she's not listening. I'm not sure this is public domain material.
And so she was distracted, you're saying, by... I think that is... Did you get her address or where she's from?
Well, yes. She lives next door. So.
All right, that'd be a really good quote, wouldn't it? He'd stop me... His Art Garfunkel face stopped me committing suicide. Yeah.
Possibly. I think that might be a slightly revisionist way of looking at it.
Oh, well, it's nice idea. So what other things do you take on in the Great Conspiracy?
Well, I get there's a lot about the general international situation at the moment, and
it's not very good, is it?
It's bad, I would say.
I think I've been alive for 35 years and I don't remember it being this bad in all my born days.
It's an unholy mess, and everyone involved seems to be lying.
But it's a gift.
As much as possible, and then lying more to cover their backs. So,
it's a gift for satire, though.
Well, yeah, I will be satirising it.
I think it's harder, because the problem about... See, in the 90s, when I used to write satire back then, it was easier because politicians and whatever, they weren't as conscious of how the media is the message, right? Whereas I think you're so kind of controlled the way that information's given out by governments now that... Unless you're like Chris Morris basically makes fun of the procedure, doesn't he, of the way that information is distributed, but personality politics is kind of out of the window, really, because the personalities are protected by this sort of media web. Do you think is that nonsense what I'm saying?
No, I think that's true, and I think, you know, the media, well, in particular this year, it's been clear that how important that is, and, you know, that there is certainly a lot of ripe satirical material in there. Are you counting the number of times we're saying satire?
Yeah, I've got a little satire-ometer under the desk. I'm hoping the word will change its meaning by the end, but go on.
I've got what you're talking about. So the personality politics is, I think, far less important, partly because I think mostly individuals wield less power. And it's one of Rob Newman's strong themes is how the concentration of political power is now outside of the traditional political arena. So why bother lampooning the Westminster politicians when really the centre of power is elsewhere?
Industry, you know, and governments and corporations,
saying that Robin Cook's got a stupid beard or something, I guess.
He has, though, hasn't he?
Well, he fair play to the lad, he's stuck by it. He stuck by his beard, and he's doing very well for himself now.
I'm going to play another track now, right? But this is something from an album by Tapazuki. Now it's actually called Sata, SATAA, which I think is some Rasta word or something. But whenever I hear it, I always imagine that he's saying satire over and over again, and he's asking for us to bring him satire. And when I first heard this, it made me laugh so much. So I almost wanted to try and get a radio satire program so that I could use this as the introduction music.
It's good to have an ambition.
It is, yeah. But, I mean, maybe you could do something on Resonance. You could do it, and this could be your opening music.
All right. Well.
Let's see what you think. This is Tapazuki and Sata. Great to
is the loud and great must be praised. Praise him in his name's sake. That man must be praised, and I art his son, so therefore he must be praised. Sata 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 Sata
They show me, show me, show me, show me all your Santa. They Santa,
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 Santa, Santa, Santa, show you, show you, Santa, 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 praise the last year. That man must be praised. And who is the king of the glory? And Santa, and Santa, and Santa, and Santa, show me all your Santa. Tell me your Santa, 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 Santa. And a Santa, Santa, gonna say the wicked man born. And a Santa, Santa, gonna say no make no trouble on ya. Santa, Santa, gonna. I came, I saw, I sleep. And I sat, I matter, I data. I hold her, I soul her, I try to control her. A unga, a munga, a sunga, a sata, a masa, a gana. A sata, 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 show me all your sata. A sata, sata, make me show me all your sata. A sata, 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 gana.
Sata, sata, sata.
A sata, 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 sata,
sata.
Satan praise the last year, that man must be praised. And a Satan matter, the wicked man born. And a Satan matter, Ghana, say no make no trouble none. Satan matter, Ghana, say Satan, Satan. And a show me all your Satan. And Satan, Satan, come and show me all your Satan. Tell me Chris Satan, tell me Chris Satan. And a Satan, Satan, Satan. And a Satan, Satan, Satan. And a Satan make you dip. And a Satan make you that. And a Satan make you this. And a Satan make you that. And a Satan matter, Ghana. Satana, 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 say no make no trouble on ya. Satana, Satana, say the only command ya. Satana, Satana, say no make no trouble on ya. Satana, Satana, say the only command ya.
Satana, Satana,
ah Satana, 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 show me all your Satana. Ah Satana, 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 show me all your Satana. Satana, praise the last year, praise that man. That man must be praised. Before I will stretch out, I am out wide and ask for his support. So show me, show me, say me, show me all your Santa. I show me, say me, show me all your Santa.
It's not the only one we'll ever have. Goes on forever, just bringing us back. the drummer boy, but my heart is stout and determined, and I long for adventure. Yes, I long for adventure.
The end of that number. That was Scout Niblett and a new single called Drummer Boy. She's from Leicester or Nottingham, can't remember which one of those places. Anyway, my guest today, you're listening to Resonance 104.4 FM or on the internet. You can listen to it on the Resonance website, but I don't know why I'm telling you that, because if you are listening to it on the Resonance website, you're already there, you know. So my guest today, I'm Stuart Lee anyway, and this is Single Parent Family One Way Thing, and it's Andy Zaltzman is my guest. He's a satirist, comedian, and he's going up to Edinburgh, aren't you?
I am, yeah.
How are you going to travel there?
I'll be going on the train, Stuart.
Right.
Don't get me started on the trains.
You know, that's another thing, right, because when, you know, 20 years ago, you could do stuff about British Rail sandwiches and whatever. They're very good now, though, aren't they?
They are very good, and particularly The GNER's root vegetable crisps are one of the outstanding snacks on British public transport at the moment.
How do you travel around when you're doing gigs? Do you use the trains? Because that's another reason I was happy to stop, was because I couldn't seem to get anywhere anymore about 2 years ago.
I mostly drive now, just because it sort of makes it feasible to get home after a gig, even if it's 200 miles back from being abused in a gay nightclub in Leeds, which has happened.
Was that one of the worst ones recently?
This was a little while ago now, but it was bad. It was
what
very
happened?
Bad. It was a place called the Birdcage in Leeds,
right?
Which I think they're used to having sort of transvestites, and anyway, they had this fairly new comedy.
You could have made an effort, couldn't you?
I could have. Yeah, I didn't. I didn't dress up for the occasion, sadly. By the time I was introduced by the compere, and by the time I got to the microphone, they'd stopped clapping about sort of 10 seconds previously, which is fairly discourteous from a comedy crowd, and they hated me from the very start. And so 20 minutes later, there was quite a lot of hostility in the room, and I had to leave by the back staircase.
Yeah. I haven't had to leave by the back staircase since some polytechnic down South London, early 90s. It's a good thing, though, leave by the back staircase.
Yes, yeah.
So, I also, when I was banned from Lichfield, I had to leave by the back staircase.
What happened there?
I did a gig supporting Jim Tavare in Lichfield, just at some festival, and it just went so badly.
that I had to get out the back of the venue. And then my management got a letter saying that from Lichfield Mayor's office or something, saying I would not be welcome to perform in a publicly funded venue in Lichfield again.
What had you done?
I just did my normal thing, but it just went really wrong somehow, to absolute silence. But weirdly, I got an email from some kid the other day who's now kind of 22 or something, and said, oh, I saw you going to complete silence in Lichfield when I was about 11. But I quite like the idea of being banned from Lichfield.
Yeah.
It's kind of small, specific area.
But only from... Only from performing there?
Only from performing. I can go in the town, right. But I have to be watched.
Not say anything that's intended to be funny?
No, no. But unless... I saw a great thing in France the other week. Actually, so I'm eating a sweet. it's really casual radio. And saw this medieval clown performance, right? And what they do is, they put before they start, they're like the bouffinades, which is kind of the handicapped people of the 1500s who would be expelled from the town and then let in once a year to come and mock people. And they draw a chalk circle round themselves, and within that circle the comedian is protected, and anything he says is, you can't take offence, you can't hold him accountable for it. And I just thought that seemed like a really magical thing. I thought if I was ever doing performing again, I'd love to use this chalk circle idea to go, this is a joke. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But what's the equivalent? I mean, and then I thought, well, yeah, everyone's kind of got a metaphorical chalk circle of some... What's your chalk circle?
My chalk circle?
Yeah. How are you protected? How do you allow yourself to be, safe within the space, you know?
I don't know. I've never really thought of it in chalk circle terms before. You've thrown me a real curveball there, Stuart. 12:44 on a Sunday.
Sorry.
I don't know, really.
Would you ever get anyone getting annoyed afterwards and going, how dare you have said that, or I don't agree with you, or whatever?
Sometimes, yeah. I mean, I try not to say anything that is needlessly offensive, and I guess, you know, any comedian will say something that someone might find offensive, but...
You've developed a manner of dispatching controversial opinions as if they were fact, haven't you?
I guess so, yes. Yeah. Well, many controversial opinions are now sort of accepted as fact, so I feel I might as well jump on that bandwagon. So.
That's a weird thing, actually. That's another thing about the difficulty of sort of satire now. I mean, you listen to a Bill Hicks record from 10 years ago, and loads of the things he's saying, oh, it's all about oil, it's controlled by a right-wing conspiracy, blah, blah, blah. You kind of think at the time they sounded like stoned hippie comedy. And but that's the real politics of today, is that there was a right-wing American cabal with an agenda to destabilise that country at any cost. Instead of, oh, right, so I thought that was just your kind of mad, paranoid joke.
Yeah. It's interesting the way it's changed in that respect, but you can still say it, and, you know, people only seem to have taken a certain amount of notice, really, I guess. But, it's been, I think, a bit of a problem that some comedians have found during sort of Gulf War II, it was fairly... That a lot of the jokes were the same as the kind of jokes that Bill Hicks and others were making all those years ago. So they've struggled to come up with anything new.
The good thing about there being Gulf War II, though, is I remember that Bob Mills had used to compare the Comedy Store, and he had, like, a World Cup set that he could bring round every four years.
Yeah.
And... you know, the regularity of these coalition incursions into Muslim countries over the last decade does mean that you must...
You've got a back catalogue
of topical material that you
just
can
change
phase
the
in,
names. Yeah.
Phase in at any point. Is that something you find yourself repeating yourself?
Sometimes, yeah. I try and keep a fairly rapid turnover of material, but I guess, you know, if a joke... Yeah, as a satirist, say, if you still feel there's a valid reason to make a joke, then why not make it, really, rather than...
People don't always feel like that, do they? Because, I mean, the Comedy Store had an embargo, I remember, on any material about 9/11, about that time.
Did they?
They really... I mean, I did benefit there and did some, because I'm not employed by them. I didn't know what the rules were, and it seemed really strange that they assumed there would be no way of doing anything about that, other than in a needlessly offensive way.
Yes, I didn't. There were a lot of, obviously, afterwards, a lot of comedians doing stuff about it, even if only at sort of new material gigs. But there wasn't. Yeah. There was nothing sort of gratuitously offensive, really, that I saw. So. think.
Let's go and hear another bit of music. This is, do you like Rich Hall?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's good, isn't he? This is him pretending to be a comedy character called Otis Lee Crenshaw, who's a prison, he's an American prisoner, and this is called In the Dark, He Looks Like You or something.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. Let me do one more. And thanks for coming out. I guess prison rape has always gotten kind of a bad name, people. And I ain't proud of nothing that happened there, but I always said if I was going to have to write a song about it, I'd make it romantic. And I was missing, Brenda at the time when I wrote this. It's called He Almost Looks Like You. Sing along. Well, there's a full moon shining on a stainless toilet bowl. An 8x12 room shrinks every time that I'm denied parole. It was a snafu. Now I'm missing you and holed up in this pen. And there's a tattoo on my ass that says that I belong to him. My cellmate beats me black and blue, but in the dark it's true, he almost looks like you. It's never hello. He just knocks me to the ground and it strikes me. But when he gives me jello and the diamond all at night, I know he likes me. I never kiss him, but sometimes I feel the urge to lie beside him. Guess I would miss him if they took him down the hallway and they fried him. Though he beats me black and blue, in the dark it's true, he almost looks like you. God damn that sweet, your little canary thing. Well, I just mind my place. Hey, I don't want no trouble. But girl, he's got your face. Say for a quarter inch of stubble. Now my heart's broke. I'm missing you so much it makes me tremble. It's God's joke. Put me in a cell with someone you resemble. Well, he's a creep when he tries to force himself on all these fellas. But down deep, I must admit I get a little jealous. When he says that I'm the one for him, and he sneaks off with other men, he almost looks like you. Come on, everybody now. Sing along. You know that deep down inside you want to. Ladies and gentlemen, the Paul McDermott Dancers. Everybody. Come on, get up. Remember, people. You can't love the one you're with. I love the one you're in with. You've been a great audience. Thank you very much and good night.
Fly!
That's Randy Alvey and his Green Fuzz from sometime in the 60s, and that was called Green Fuzz. I don't know when it was. Mid, I expect. Our guest is Andy Zoltzman. How are you, right?
I've had a bit of a cold, to be honest, this week, Stuart, but other than that, I'm fine.
What do you hope to achieve by going to the Edinburgh Festival?
Well, I guess I just want to sort of get better, really, and do a good show. And I think you can get carried away in Edinburgh by worrying about who's watching you and reviews, and so I'll just try and do it for its own sake, really.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really good place to be able to do an hour for a month, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, that's the, I read this thing, interview with that comedy terrorist bloke yesterday. Have you ever met him?
No, I haven't.
He's often around.
I know people who've met, who have been on car journeys to gigs with him.
Yeah, well, I did a talk at Greenwich Theatre, and he just interrupted all the way through and was really irritating.
Right.
He's kind of, he wants to be spotted.
Yeah.
But to do what? That's the weird thing, he can't do anything.
Yes, but I guess that's, you know, sort of the way that a lot of the kind of celebrity industry works now, that
yeah,
people with not a lot to offer are sort of thrust forward, and I guess he's just finding a way to do that.
Yeah.
But I've not seen his work, really, so I don't know.
What would you do if he gate-crushed your gig and tried to kiss you?
And tried to kiss me?
While dressed as... That's what he did to Prince William.
Oh, right. I don't know, really. I think, well, I'd I don't know, try some kind of martial arts manoeuvre.
Would you satirise him?
I'd lampoon him as soon as he set foot on my stage. I'd get my finest lampoon out and
lance him with it.
Yeah.
Lance the boil of his
of
his pretentiousness
with
the lance of satire.
That's right.
Let's hear another one of the tracks you chose. This is Radio 4. What's it called?
It's track 6.
It's the sixth one on their album Gotham. Here it is.
Do worry if they're following you around.
That's Radio 4, one of the exciting new wave of New York bands that sound like the exciting new wave of British bands from 1978. And that was called Calling All Enthusiasts. And don't forget that after this show, at 2 o'clock, is Calling All Pensioners, the Community Pensioner Programme at 2 o'clock, which is a similar title to Calling All Enthusiasts, hence I mentioned it at that point. Andy Zaltzman's been with us. Where can people see you in the, after Edinburgh and back in London then?
Well, just sort of gigs around the place.
And at that new club?
Yes.
The Political Animal.
Political Animal, which I think the first one is on the 11th of September, which is coincidence rather than design, and then the 9th of October.
11th of September, 9th of October.
Got Jeremy Hardy on the 11th of September.
Oh, yeah. What's he like these days?
He's very good.
Is he?
Yeah.
He's got an annoying voice, though.
Do you think so? I've never found it annoying. And Andy Parsons is on as well. Any comments about his voice?
No.
Right, good.
It's not his own. It's someone else's.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm comparing it, so. Cool. And we've got Bobby Birdie doing the songs again.
Well, thanks for coming in.
It's been a
pleasure. Have a good trip up north.
Yes.
Now, the next track we're going to play is in honour of the 60th birthday of Mick Jagger, who is 60 this week. And it's a good song from Between the Buttons by the Rolling Stones. It's called Connection.
If your stomach's full of food, you can start worrying about me. And this is what's happened. There's people will worry and worry more, and they'll have less and less work to do as the years go on. They won't have hardly any work to do because there will be machines to do it for them, which has already happened. And so that they'll have to work like 4 hours a day, and the rest of the time they've got to do something else.
Why do you think something else?
Well, that something else isn't going to be what people think. It isn't going to be just jumping around and swimming and just reading books and going to movies, because they're very, you get very bored with those things very quickly.
What is it going to be?
Well, we don't know, that's the problem. But it's going to be, I hope it's going to be something good. I don't know.
And that was...
Everything's happened to me.
Mick Jagger there, from the soundtrack of... the 1968 film Tonight Let's All Make Love in London, plus talking about what he thinks the future will be like. He says in the future there won't be any work, people will just be jumping around and swimming and stuff like that. Well, we live in the future now, and unfortunately Jagger's prediction turned out to be wrong. Now just released is a 5 CD box set by The Fall called Touch Sensitive Bootleg Box Set. It's a set of 5 gigs with largely identical set lists played by 2 as yet undistinguished lineups of the band in support of the album You Are Missing Winner, which wasn't thought of as one of their best. What kind of person is going to shell out £19.99 for that? Well, I did. And all 4 fans will. This is a track recorded at the Knitting Factory on the 23rd of November 2001. I Wake Up in the City, preceded by Enigmatic Dream.
Enigmatic Dream. Modernity. Water in 0171. Reads Saturday, May. Tents and tomatoes in Blackpool, where Jimmy Bloomfield has been brought back from the dead to host Joust in Modernity, one of the many football grounds that have been converted to hold this revived sport from today and forthwith. Joust at Modernity. Torrid landscape, every with a tent, bedecked terraces, out aloud, too drafty. I'm shoved to the left by a steward, but every moment my companion catches and reminds me I am completely deaf. Large tomatoes and golden beige striped tents, plumps and beige linen supper terracing seem to symbolize unclean, shaven, sick, new, decadent, the Lancashire Northern Western Quarter has seemed to materialize. Plop by Aristic Slowly! They watch Movement by anybody. And with Michael, his children and wife at home at last from hospital. It is his birthday out in weeks. Always energetic, always cheerful. Facts again, fucking scratch. This makes New York look Athena. For Lower Northern Western Quarter of Manchester.
Yeah, that was the bloke, you know, that Ruins, that Japanese band. They're like a little three-piece, they do kind of prog rock crossed with jazz. That's the singer, the drummer. What's his name? Yoshida Tatsuya, and that's his new kind of. They're just a vocal group that he's formed. It's not new; it's from a couple of years ago. They're called Jehovah anyway, and that's from the album Zubi Zava, and that was called Bitter Vita, and it was 2 minutes. 7 seconds long, for anyone who's taking notes. We've got a second guest now. It's Andy Miller. He's a writer and all sorts of things, and he's very kindly brought in a copy of John Harris's The Last Party, which he edited, which is a book about Britpop, which was great, because it's one of the things that was stolen out of my bag from the Costa Dorada restaurant on Hanway Street off Tottenham Court Road on Thursday, and I'd nearly finished it, so thanks for giving it.
How much did you have left to go?
Just the last chapter, actually. But I know what was going to happen, because it's a true story about about the, you know, Suede and Blur and stuff.
The last chapter is a kind of Dickensian
is it?
Sweep through where they are now.
Well, you know, as much as I enjoyed it, I didn't want to buy another copy just to
That's right.
The last bit. It's good. It was really great, though.
I think it's very good. I think it's a very, very good book. But very timely as well, because everybody is kind of embarrassed about the records that they bought in 1995.
Britpop, Blair, and the demise of English rock.
Well, his argument is that what Oasis ushered in was an age of people in anoraks standing on big stages singing Wonderwall to 100,000 people.
Yeah.
And that age has yet to really come to a close.
I know, yeah.
Some might say.
It's weird. I heard this Leo Sayer song on the radio the other day, and I've been trying to think for ages what a load of those people like Top Loader and stuff remind me of. And I thought, yeah, it's that kind of, that came in with it as well, kind of just early 70s sort of plinky plonky singer songwriter.
That's
kind
right.
Of really weird whole thing, but you've got your own book coming out in September. Andy did a book before you might have heard of called Tilting at Windmills about how he didn't like sport, which was a great comfort to a lot of other people who didn't like sport. And your next one's a little thing about the Kinks. Yep.
Well, I spent 3 years working on Tilting at Windmills, and fundamentally, I would advise anyone who plans on spending 3 years writing about something they don't like against it, because it drives you mad. And towards the end of that process, I thought, I've got the next thing I write. I've got to write about something I like at completely the other extreme. And the opportunity presented itself to write about the Village Green Preservation Society by the Kinks, which is my favourite record by anyone.
Right.
And I've spent the last 7 months writing about something I really do like, and that drives you nuts as well. So,
oh, right, how frustrating.
Write about something you don't really care about.
Yeah, and what would that be then?
It wouldn't be a good book, but what would it be for me?
For your next book, which would be about something you don't really care about, what would it be?
Oh, I don't know. Oh, can we come back to that? Yeah, I'll have a think about it.
You know, and then the blurb could say, Andy Miller is not especially interested in
You know, if I can think of it quickly, that indicates that I probably either like it too much or hate it too much. So we need to just let something come from the side in a while.
Richard Thomas, the composer, asked me what his next opera should be about, and I said wool. The manufacture and wool. Marketing and distribution of wool. Because I just thought, you know, that would be quite hard to do, probably.
And what would the high point of that be, the dramatic high point?
Well, ideally, it wouldn't even feature wool manu. It would be just pieces of wool, actual like objects going through machines and stuff. So I don't know.
Yes. But
when's the Kinks book out?
It's out in September.
And what is it? This is like a Stuart McConey interview now. What is it about? what is it about Ray Davies's masterwork that has...
It's really good. And I'll see if I can find a more sophisticated way of saying that.
Well, obviously, it's not that simple for you to answer, otherwise you couldn't have written a whole book about it.
The thing about it is, aside from my personal emotional response to it, which, like any piece of music, if you like it, you like it.
Yeah.
But I do think it... it contains the best examples of somebody writing in the pop idiom in a way that I don't think anybody else really does, although lots of people have tried. And we were talking about, weren't we, I think the Kinks are probably more unfashionable at the moment than they've ever been, partly because they became synonymous with Britpop. And the idea of them...
Damon Albarn sang Waterloo Sunset.
Yeah, and the idea of the Kinks being, you know, a rinky-dink piano singing about double-decker buses and cups of tea... isn't really it, I think. I think that's a very useful thing for Ray Davies. But I think he writes about bigger subjects.
And yet, the first track we're going to hear is...
but very interesting. This is the title track. This is the Village Green Preservation Society, and there's a little bit before that about Ray Davies on Radio 1 talking about it.
OK, let's hear this.
Ray, I was fascinated by the... latest LP by the Kinks, the first one I think you've done with an embracing theme, right?
Well, yeah, you could say that, Brian, actually.
Well, I did, actually.
It's a nice way of putting it.
What sort of gave you the basic idea for this particular album?
Well, I was looking for a title for the album about 3 months ago when we'd finished most of the tracks, and somebody said that one of the things the Kinks have been doing for the last 3 years is preserving. So, but I don't think you can change Britain that much because... you know, we're the way we are. So I'm just going to try and sort of hang on to a lot of the nice things.
Good. I think a lot of affection comes through in this song. Maybe we could hear it now, could we?
Oh, yeah.
Here we go, the title track from the new album.
We are the Village Green Preservation Society. God save Donald Duck. Bonneville and Variety. We are the Desperate Dan Appreciation Society. God save Strawberry Jam and all the different varieties. Preserving the old ways from being abused. Protecting the new ways for me and for you. What more can we do? We are the Dropcare Preservation Society.
God
That's the end of that. That was the Village Green Preservation Society from a BBC radio session, wasn't it? By
yes,
the Kinks.
Right, yeah.
Go on then, tell us about that.
Well, the thing about that song is the thing we were talking about before, the idea that the Kinks are terribly quaint and parochial and that they just want to sing about cricket matches and, as I say, set to a jaunty piano beat. Isn't true, and if you look at the year that was written and recorded, it was written in 1968, which 68, as we know, was a year of unrest, student riots in Paris. But in Britain, 68 is a really interesting year because it's the year that Enoch Powell made his speech, and it's the year of the "I'm Backing Britain" campaign.
Right.
And Ray Davies had a history of working with people like Ned Sherrin on these satirical programmes.
Yeah,
I wanted to bring that in the second hour. The satirical programmes of the 60s. And so it's very difficult to listen to that song and actually take it at face value, like a lot of the songs on the album. It's much more sly than I think it gets written about.
It's like an attack on small-minded British parochial values.
Yeah, but it's also a very personal thing for him. What he's kind of saying is he's presenting a list of things that he likes. He's quite open about that. I like these things. And then kind of shrugging his shoulders in the chorus and saying, well, you can only stand up for the things that you like. Anything else is kind of posing. You've got to remember this is a record that came out in the same week that the Stones released Beggar's Banquet, which has Street Fighting Man on it, which is the polar opposite of kind of modish pretending to be rough.
Yeah.
music. It's Mr. Mick's birthday today, isn't it?
Oh, is it today? He's 60 today,
There's a story in the Express this morning that although he's 60 today, scientists may be able to keep him rocking for another 120 years.
Wow, great. Using what? New rock
gene technology.
Yeah.
And they've illustrated this with a picture of Keith Richards as he is now. So, to give
it's
you
really
some idea.
I mean, if the Kinks were reformed, or there's loads of people I would go and see, and loads of people I have gone and seen from that era. But even though the Stones are still going, there's no... I just don't feel any interest in ever seeing them. And you feel you would just because they embody some piece of history, but it doesn't, it just feels like nothing to me. Whereas, that album by the Kinks has a real feel coming off it still.
Yeah, and the thing about the Kinks, I mean, the Kinks only, again, I say the Kinks split up. If the Kinks split up, they split up about 6 or 7 years ago.
Yeah.
People had loads of opportunities to go and see them. I saw them a few times and I hate, you know. They weren't very good. You know, if you go and see Ray Davies, you're going to get a better show because I think he gave up on the Kinks many years before, but liked the idea of being able to go around and use the name and, you know, keep squabbling with his brother and that.
So. What's the next thing you wanted to play? Where did my spring go? What's that?
This isn't a song from the album, but it's a song that was written at the same kind of time from a show called Where Was Spring? And it's the last Kinks track, I think, from the late 60s that sounds like the group that you would think of as the classic Kinks. After this, they turn into a rock band with ever-diminishing results. But this is just a terrific song. It's only ever been released in the early 70s. It's long unavailable, and it's a great shame because it's
fantastic.
Wow,
what a brilliant thing to be able to hear. We're indeed privileged. This is the Kinks, Where Did My Spring Go?
Where did the spring go? Where did the trees go? Where did the sun go? Where did the bluebirds fly? Why did the rainbow turn into shadow? Why am I cold now? Why does my skin sag? Why ain't my back straight? Why do my feet ache? Where did my youth go? Where did my life go? Remember walking in the rain and getting soaking wet. Now I've got rheumatic pain and I'm ready to regret it. Where did my teeth go? Where did my muscles go? Where did my shoulders go? Where did my chest go? When you were loving me, you were just using me. You were employing me, you were destroying me. Now all I've got are Varica's veins. Where did the spring go? Where did my hormones go?
Where did my energy go? Where did my go? Where did the pleasure go? Where did my head go? Remember all those sleepless nights, making love back then the night. Every time you took my love, you were shortening my life. Where did my teeth go? Where did my hair go? Where did my shoulders go? Where did my chest go? Where did my hormones go? Where did my go? Where did my energy go? Where did my skin go? Where did my muscles go? Where did my liver go? Where did my heart go? Where did my bones go?
That's the Kinks' Where Did My Spring Go, which has been unavailable since 1972 or something. And it's been brought in by Andy Miller, who's a Kinksologist. And he's got a book coming out about the Village Green Preservation Society album, which was in 1968. What specifically about 1968 meant that that record happened?
The thing about 1968 is 1968 is the year that the pop scene and the rock scene start to split off from one another for the first time. Up until the release of Sgt. Pepper in 1967, the pop market is still a fundamentally singles-based market, and nobody sold big quantities of albums or thought of albums as entities in their own right. But the success of Sgt. Pepper did two evil things, which one, it made the studio and the main instrument for any album, and it also meant that pop groups start giving interviews where they talk about, we wish the kids would come to our gigs and sit down and just listen.
Artists.
We can't progress if says Graham Nash of the Hollies, if the kids won't listen to us.
Right.
So I think that's one thing. And I think the other thing is that the record industry realised that, because Sgt. Pepper was such a big album with no singles from it, and because the pop audiences were getting older, they realised they could sell lots more albums, which are more expensive, provided they directed them at the right people. So suddenly everybody's getting an opportunity they didn't have 2 years earlier to make their big statement. Ray Davies was no different to anybody else. But what he didn't do was make a psychedelic record. They never have that period of kind of, you know, going on the incredible voyage of Philosopher Sam and his 15 cats or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. So what's the American equivalent of that then? It was a comparable thing happening at the same time.
The big influential record in America, and I think it was a really, really big thing in London particularly, was the first album by The Band, which is called Music from Big Pink. Or it's not actually called that, is it? Or is it? Yes, it is. Anyway, it's the one with the really poor Bob Dylan painting on the front cover.
Oh, yeah.
And,
that is a bad painting, isn't it?
It's really
they
awful.
They could have done better than that.
Although, apparently, it apologises in the liner notes. It says, we're sorry, the painting isn't very good, but it's really good if you see it big.
Oh, well.
So, but it's a really, I mean, it's a great record, but it's very, firstly, it's very back to basics. There's very little studio trickery and there's very little psychedelic stuff in the lyrics. But also the band looked like they'd stepped out of some coal mine 100 years earlier, and on the inner sleeve of the album they're photographed with their families. And I think that was a really big thing for a lot of the pop scene there. And that's why you get all these records like the Kinks in their particular way, but also like the Stones and like Traffic and people like that, going back to basics.
Should we hear a band song then from that album? This is The Wait.
When I saw Carmen and the devil walk inside my side, Moses, Moses, there's nothing you can say. It's just old Luke, and Luke's waiting on a judgment day. Well, Luke, my friend, what about young Annalee? He said, do me a favor, son, won't you stay and keep Annalee company? Take a load off.
If you really mean it,
That's Fairport Convention, Meet on the Ledge. I suppose you're thinking that's like an English response to the band.
I think that I don't know if you know if it's a response. I just think they love. I think they love the band. You hear all these stories about Richard Thompson walking around London carrying a copy of that album under his arm and giving it to people if he scratched it.
Oh right.
He'd needed to have a perfect copy with him at all times,
right.
Which says says a lot about Richard Thompson.
Yeah,
who we love, but
that's in a way a more honest sound. It makes the band seem a bit contrived somehow.
I think the thing about the band is they're brilliant. They push this image of themselves living out in the backwoods, but of course their albums were recorded in Hollywood. That album was recorded in Sammy Davis Jr.'s house.
Was it?
Yeah.
Oh, right.
With egg boxes on the wall to make it sound like they were in the backwoods, but actually they were...
I had no idea. I read a whole Levon Helms book about being in the band, and it doesn't even mention that in it. I'm sure it doesn't say that he went to Sammy Davis Jr.'s
house. I don't think Sammy Davis was there at the time. I don't think you can hear him tapping in the
if
background.
If he was, he must have had a big beard on and cold, you know, dungarees and things to fit in with them. The other good thing about the band, of course, is they split up, which, of course, Fairport Convention tragically didn't do, and you can still go and see them now, and they're rubbish.
You cannot. I saw them last year. In fact, actually, John Harris, who's the author of The Last Party that we were talking about earlier, he went to see them last year, and he went to see them at their festival, which is called Croppredy, which is up in Oxfordshire. And he said about 10 minutes after they came on, he fell asleep under an ice cream van. And when he woke up 3 hours later, they were still going, apparently playing the same jig.
Yeah.
But, you know,
I saw them at Oxford Apollo on Martin Carthy's 60th birthday celebration, which they sort of hosted. And everyone else was really good that was on, but they were just like a really bad pub band. There didn't seem any connection with that group of... and indeed there isn't, apart from the one bloke who's still in it. There's no connection between back to the 60s.
The thing about Fairport Convention is they've had, like, the most... amazing people. And Richard Thompson playing with them and Sandy Denny playing with them.
Yeah.
But they never really... I think it's a weird thing happening with them at the moment. I think this whole kind of acid folk thing is bringing them a kind of respectability that they haven't had for 30 years.
Yeah, and don't deserve.
Quite possibly.
Talking of acid folk, knowing that you'd probably get around to that, I brought this in, right? That Andy now has in his hand... a copy of the second album by Dave and Tony Arthur, who were
this is very
focused in that era. I've got the first one. This second week, I got this in Northumberland's largest secondhand bookshop, which is in Alnwick, about a month ago. It's still in the shrink wrap. And you can open it now on air.
Oh, that's
and
brilliant.
And we'll play something off it.
I can open it, but I don't get to keep it.
You don't get to keep it. No.
Okay.
That's disappointing.
I should describe it for the listeners. It's called Hearken to the Witch's Rune.
And, of course, a rune makes no sound either. It's just an inscription.
And there's no apostrophe in witches.
Right, OK.
So I don't know if what that means, really.
No.
Anyway, the record has been graded very good.
Oh, right.
Near perfect.
That's not a judgment on its musical quality, just on the actual state that it's
right.
in.
Right. And it's by Dave and Tony Arthur. Tony Arthur... may be familiar to listeners, dear Lord. Well, she may be familiar to listeners, former viewers of Play School, because I think she was on Play School.
She was,
My memory of her was that she wore Romany skirts and boots and stood by barges, is that right?
Yeah, that's exactly what she did, yeah.
Tear
off the protective covering. There it goes. Not been played since 1974, this. And which track do you want?
Hang on. On the B-side, there's a track called The Cruel Mother.
Which one is it?
It's, track 3.
I'll pass it over.
Side B.
Track 3, side B. She's now married to Malcolm Hay, who's Time Out's comedy critic. I often see her around, and she's always kind of slightly distressed by the amount of excitement that I have at talking to her about her career as part of Dave and Tony Arthur. And she also took the sleeve photo to the recently reissued... Barry Dransfield. Did you like that Barry Dransfield album?
No, not really.
Not really. It's not very good, is it? Okay, here we are. This is The Cruel Mother, Dave and Tony Arthur. I think we're nearly there. Yeah, here it comes.
There was a lady came from York, all alone and lonely. She fell in love with a father's flock. She loved him well, she loved him long.
back against the thorn. All alone underground lay, and there she had two pretty babes born, all down by the greenwood side. She drew a scarf from off her head, all alone and alone lay, and bound those pretty babe's hands and legs, all down by the greenwood side. She laid those babes across her lap, all alone and alone lay, and swore they'd never suck milk nor pap, all down by the greenwood side. She drew their little dresses apart, all alone and alone lay, and stabbed those pretty babes to the heart, all down by the greenwood side. She wiped the knife all on the grass, all alone and alone lay. The more she wiped, the blood ran fast, all down by the greenwood side. She washed her hands all in.
No, just to me, yeah. Oh, good. Well, there we are. That's Harken. That's a bit off Harken to the Witch's Rune by Dave and Tony Arthur. That's The Cruel Mother. It's not as good as the other version of it I know by Shirley Collins. Remember that it's all right though. There's some poetry on the back. Harken to the Witch's Rune. Darksome night and shining moon, east, south, west, then north. Harken to the Witch's Rune. Here I come to call thee forth. And it goes on in that vein. And there's a really nice picture of Tony Arthur on the back.
It's written in difficult to read blue writing, and Stuart hasn't forgotten how to read.
It's written on difficult to read writing on a black background. And anyway, I got that from Britain's largest secondhand bookshop, Northumberland's largest secondhand bookshop in Alnwick. And who'd have thought? I've looked all over the internet for it. Who'd have thought a chance trip to the Northumberland coast would unearth that for £30 that cost. Anyway, do you think there's you were saying earlier on, but is there a comparable person to Ray Davies today? I think
the way Ray Davies worked was that he was a great believer in songs, that the production and the band for performance were all designed to highlight the song, the thing that he'd written. So in that respect, I don't think there are many people who do that who are trying to do something different. But I did bring in a track from the new Luke Haynes album, because I think Luke Haynes is the guy from the Auteurs and Black Box Recorder.
I've never seen them, but I did see him about 2 months ago sitting on a bench at the Thameslink train station in King's Cross.
Did he look happy?
No, he looked furious. He looked as if he'd looked across at Britain, at the British Society, and was disgusted and angry about it.
Well, if you liked that, you'll find him that's expressed in much of his work.
What's this song called?
Well, this song is called Future Generation, and it's a very amusing song about how he's misunderstood, but generations to come will acclaim him immediately as the genius he is.
Great. This is the Auteurs, then Future Generation.
Common of my home ground.
This is the story of the band. Wet weekends and New Year parties. You know I mean it from the heart. The next generation. Get it from the start. I don't care what your old man say. He's a jerk anyway. Future generation. The future generation will catch my falling star. My name's Lazarus, I'm a Pisces. This is a song for a future generation. This music could destroy a nation. A future generation. The future generation will catch my falling star. And of course I love the old songs. From New Wave to Nada Park. The next generation.
That's broken.
That's so much for the wonder of technology. My technology, not Resonance FM's.
Wow. That's good, actually, because we haven't had any disasters today. And that's it's nice to have one. What would it have been like?
What, that particular song? It goes through a very nice thing. The thing about Luke Haynes is he's just a very essentially funny man with an unhealthy interest, like most of Britain, in kind of, you know, the seaside and Nazis. That seems to be his two big things. But what he's trying to do is he tries, like Ray Davis, to write songs that anyone could cover,
right,
and then bring an approach to them that nobody's done before.
When Ray Davis got sort of picked up as a totemic figure by Britpop, do you think that was something he enjoyed or felt slightly resentful of?
Both.
Right.
I think the thing about Ray Davis is Ray Davis... This sounds like I'm being critical of him. I think he's got a good eye for business. And I think he knew that it was good for business to be talked about, better to be talked about than not talked about.
Right.
And it kind of bought him, I think it bought him the freedom to finally stop playing with the Kinks. I think it gave him a solo career, which is the thing that he'd been striving for since about 1968, 69. So, I saw him play at the end of last year with this new band he's got. He was fantastic.
Are they called the Kinks, or are they the Ray Davis?
Ray Davis and his band.
Right, right.
I'm sure they're all on a wage, and I'm sure it's not democratic in any sense, but, you know, neither were the Kinks, so...
No, never mind. If you had to do a book about your second favourite album of all time, what would that be?
My second favourite album of all time? I don't think... I could write a book about my second favourite album, you know, it's easy to write about your favourite things. I think I'd want to write... You know who I'd like to write a book about? I'd like to write a book about Bogshed.
Oh, right.
Don't know if anyone remembers them.
Early 80s, kind of a bit birthday party-ish, sort of clunky...
Listen to The Fall a lot.
Yeah.
And they were really good, and none of their records have been reissued, and they've disappeared completely from the critical radar, and there may be a good reason for that, which is that maybe they weren't any good, but I've got a really fond memory of them, and as I get older, I feel the need to want to listen to that more and more. But I suppose that's just getting old, isn't it?
So we might be able to look forward to Andy Miller's Bogshed book in the future. Thanks for coming in and talking about the Kinks. That
My
Kinks
pleasure.
Book is out in September. What's it called?
Kinks of the Village Green Preservation Society.
Right. I've been Stuart Lee. You've been listening to Resonance 104.4 FM. After this is Calling All Pensioners, Pensioners Angry Programme. And tomorrow I'm here again, actually, helping out Simon Munnery on his show, which is called An Experimental Half Hour. That's at 3:30, and it's an hour long, and it's described as an experiment in time expansion. And he's still not tired of that joke after a few months of doing it. We're going to leave with the title track of the William Parker Violin Trio's new album. And this is called Scrapbook. See you next week.